Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Región de Murcia. Pruebas específicas de certificación. Inglés, nivel B1. Convocatoria Ordinaria 2022. Comprensión de textos orales.
Task 1. Listen to famous Scots. Match each statement, 1 to 10, with one of the famous Scots, A to E, according to the recording. The first one is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A to E, on the answer sheet, in spaces 1 to 10. Very important. You will have to match two sentences, 1 to 10, for each Scot, A to E. You will hear the recording twice.
Now you have 2 minutes to read the task before the audio starts.
Scotland is not a big country and does not have many people, but there are many famous and important Scots. Here are five of them. Robert Adam made some of the best buildings in Great Britain in the second half of the 1700s. He went to school and university in Edinburgh and then to Rome for 5 years to learn about the buildings there. Then he came back to Britain. He worked on the new town in Edinburgh, and you can see buildings by him in Charlotte Square. There are many beautiful buildings by Adam in England and Scotland. People come from all over Europe and America to look at them. David Hume was a great thinker and writer. People still read and talk about his books today because they are so important. He also wrote A Very Long History of England, at that time the most important book of this kind. Hume went to the University of Edinburgh when he was 12 years old. Later, he went to France and made friends with famous French thinkers like Voltaire and Rousseau. His most important book is A Treatise of Human Nature. The next great Scot is Robert Burns. The Scots call him Robbie or Rabbi Burns. He was born into a poor country family, the oldest of seven children near Ayr in southwest Scotland. He began writing poems when he was still a boy. He wrote about important things, about life and love, rich people and poor people, and Scotland. His words still speak to us today, and many Scots love his poems. Burns was born on the 25th of January, and that night is called Burns Night by the Scots. On Burns Night there are special dinners, not just in Scotland, but for Scottish people in other countries too. They eat haggis, a special Scottish food, drink whiskey, and say poems by Burns. And at midnight on the 31st of December, in many English-speaking countries, people sing the words of Burns when they sing Auld Lang Syne. The name of the song means something like long, long ago. James Watt, was born in Greenock near Glasgow and did not often go to school when he was a child. He stayed at home and his mother was his teacher. Watt was a quick thinker and he liked to build things with his hands. He got work building things for the teachers at the University of Glasgow. There, he became interested in steam engines. He began a business with his friend Matthew Bolton, and from 1794 to 1824, they made 1,164 steam engines. These engines changed Great Britain and the world. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was born in Edinburgh, went to the University of Edinburgh, and became a doctor. But he did not make much money as a doctor, so he began to write stories about a detective called Sherlock Holmes. Soon, Sherlock Holmes was famous, and Conan Doyle became rich and famous too. He wrote many stories about Holmes and his friend Dr. Watson, and also wrote stories about a man called Professor Challenger. There are films of many Sherlock Holmes stories. Do you know any other great Scots? Scotland is not a big country and does not have many people, but there are many famous and important Scots. Here are five of them. Robert Adam made some of the best buildings in Great Britain in the second half of the 1700s. He went to school and university in Edinburgh and then to Rome for 5 years to learn about the buildings there. Then he came back to Britain. He worked on the new town in Edinburgh and you can see buildings by him in Charlotte Square. There are many beautiful buildings by Adam in England and Scotland. People come from all over Europe and America to look at them. David Hume was a great thinker and writer. People still read and talk about his books today because they are so important. He also wrote A Very Long History of England, at that time the most important book of this kind. Hume went to the University of Edinburgh when he was 12 years old. Later, he went to France and made friends with famous French thinkers like Voltaire and Rousseau. His most important book is A Treatise of Human Nature. The next great Scot is Robert Burns. The Scots call him Robbie or Rabbi Burns. He was born into a poor country family, the oldest of seven children near Ayr in southwest Scotland. He began writing poems when he was still a boy. He wrote about important things, about life and love, rich people and poor people, and Scotland. His words still speak to us today, and many Scots love his poems. Burns was born on the 25th of January, and that night is called Burns Night by the Scots. On Burns Night there are special dinners, not just in Scotland, but for Scottish people in other countries too. They eat haggis, a special Scottish food, drink whiskey and say poems by Burns. And at midnight on the 31st of December, in many English-speaking countries, people sing the words of Burns when they sing Auld Lang Syne. The name of the song means something like long, long ago. James Watt was born in Greenock near Glasgow and did not often go to school when he was a child. He stayed at home and his mother was his teacher. Watt was a quick thinker, and he liked to build things with his hands. He got work building things for the teachers at the University of Glasgow. There, he became interested in steam engines. He began a business with his friend Matthew Bolton, and from 1794 to 1824, they made 1,164 steam engines. These engines changed Great Britain and the world. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was born in Edinburgh, went to the University of Edinburgh and became a doctor, but he did not make much money as a doctor, so he began to write stories about a detective called Sherlock Holmes. Soon Sherlock Holmes was famous, and Conan Doyle became rich and famous too. He wrote many stories about Holmes and his friend Dr. Watson, and also wrote stories about a man called Professor Challenger. There are films of many Sherlock Holmes stories. Do you know any other great Scots?
Task 2. Listen to a woman talking about her dyslexia. Decide which six statements, A to M, are true according to the recording. The first sentence is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A to M, on the answer sheet, in spaces 11 to 16. You will hear the recording twice.
Now you have 2 minutes to read the task before the audio starts.
I don't think, as a child, that I was aware of my dyslexia until I grew a bit older. Maybe not until I was 7 or 8. Then it became obvious that I really couldn't learn at the same speed as everyone else. I usually tried to avoid certain classes so I didn't embarrass myself. So I used to go and hide in a cupboard. I used to always hide in a store cupboard. And unfortunately, my English teacher knew that was my spot, but he was very nice about it and went, "Okay, class is nearly over, but it'd be nice if you came out of the cupboard now." And I'd go, "Ah." Except for that, I loved school, just certain lessons. When I officially got the extra classes for dyslexic students, it was probably not until I was 11, which of course was quite late. Still, I'd had extra help with reading and spelling and stuff before, but not officially. This dyslexia class gave me the skills to help me pick up things, read things easily, just different tricks, strategies, and it made a big difference. For dyslexic children, this support is everything because it changes your whole attitude on how you can approach things. The skills you're given, it made me feel sure of my own ability. It just changed me. I was good at art, anything visual, basically. I could pick anything up instantly. You know, I could scan a room and I could remember everything in its place. What color everything was and, you know, sports as well, drama, anything where I was good at expressing myself. My mother sent me to dance class when I was 5, and I have to say, I wasn't really into it for a while. It took me some time to fall in love with it, but as soon as I realized that I had strength in it, then I became very good at it. And that changed my whole attitude on everything else I dealt with. So it was wonderful to find something where I could just focus all my energy. I don't know. I loved the discipline of it, the structure of it, and everything. I don't regret having dyslexia at all. I think it gave me different strengths and resilience and made me focus on my skills as soon as I found them. And it made me work harder than I would have if I found things easier. I don't think I would have ever made it. I think if kids knew that dyslexia came with its positives instead of just using its negatives, you know, we're described as being bad at numbers or spelling or reading. Well, you have many strengths as well, and that you're just like everybody else because they have weaknesses as well. Every kid's got to feel some sort of achievement. And I think that's where we're lacking in the structure we have in learning now. We've got to give kids as many opportunities to feel that they're achieving something. I don't think, as a child, that I was aware of my dyslexia until I grew a bit older. Maybe not until I was 7 or 8. Then it became obvious that I really couldn't learn at the same speed as everyone else. I usually tried to avoid certain classes so I didn't embarrass myself. So I used to go and hide in a cupboard. I used to always hide in a store cupboard. And unfortunately, my English teacher knew that was my spot, but he was very nice about it and went, "Okay, class is nearly over, but it'd be nice if you came out of the cupboard now." And I'd go, "Ah." Except for that, I loved school, just certain lessons. When I officially got the extra classes for dyslexic students, it was probably not until I was 11, which of course was quite late. Still, I'd had extra help with reading and spelling and stuff before, but not officially. This dyslexia class gave me the skills to help me pick up things, read things easily, just different tricks, strategies, and it made a big difference. For dyslexic children, this support is everything because it changes your whole attitude on how you can approach things. The skills you're given, it made me feel sure of my own ability. It just changed me. I was good at art, anything visual, basically. I could pick anything up instantly, you know? I could scan a room and I could remember everything in its place, what color everything was and, you know, sports as well, drama, anything where I was good at expressing myself. My mother sent me to dance class when I was 5, and I have to say, I wasn't really into it for a while. It took me some time to fall in love with it, but as soon as I realized that I had strength in it, then I became very good at it, and that changed my whole attitude on everything else I dealt with. So it was wonderful to find something where I could just focus all my energy. I don't know. I loved the discipline of it, the structure of it, and everything. I don't regret having dyslexia at all. I think it gave me different strengths and resilience and made me focus on my skills as soon as I found them. And it made me work harder than I would have if I found things easier. I don't think I would have ever made it. I think if kids knew that dyslexia came with its positives instead of just using its negatives, you know, we're described as being bad at numbers or spelling or reading. Well, you have many strengths as well, and that you're just like everybody else because they have weaknesses as well. Every kid's got to feel some sort of achievement. And I think that's where we're lacking in the structure we have in learning now. We've got to give kids as many opportunities to feel that they're achieving something.
Task 3. Listen to a biography of Aretha Franklin. Choose the best option, A, B or C, according to the recording. The first item is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A, B or C, on the answer sheet, in spaces 17 to 26. You will hear the recording twice.
Now you have 2 minutes to read the task before the audio starts.
If there was someone in Detroit who was born to sing, it was little Aretha. Her mother was a gospel singer, and her father was a preacher who believed that music could move not just people's hearts, but the world. Her mom left when Aretha was very little, but she never felt alone. Home was always filled with musicians, and she learned to play the piano just by listening to them. She started singing in the gospel choir at the church where her father was a minister. Aretha's voice was so powerful and as smooth as silk. Listening to her, the whole congregation felt that tomorrow would be a brighter day. Convinced of her talent, Aretha's father took her on tour, and together they went from church to church. Wherever Aretha performed, she did it with such grace that people would cry with joy. But Even though she loved gospel music, Aretha dreamed that her voice could be heard outside the church, in people's homes. So, when a record company offered her a contract, she didn't have to think about it twice. Before long, Aretha's songs were climbing the charts. There was something magical in her voice that moved people's hearts and bodies, much like her most popular song. It was called Respect, and it was a song written by Otis Redding that sounded brand new in Aretha's voice. Suddenly, the words of a tired working man became an anthem for African American women demanding equal respect. One of Aretha's friends was Martin Luther King Jr., the great civil rights leader. She stood next to him, challenging people to raise their voices against racism. When he died, she sang the most beautiful song in his honor, Precious Lord. Aretha started writing her own songs and producing them too. She went from gospel to jazz, doo-wop and pop to rhythm and blues, singing every song from the bottom of her heart. She recorded hundreds of great hits, and she loved them all. Aretha used a secret recipe when writing her songs. They had to talk about everyday ups and downs. That's what soul was all about. It took Aretha 30 long years to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She was the first woman in history to be on the list. Aretha was the queen of soul and a trailblazer for many other female artists. But her greatest honor was singing at the inauguration of the first African-American president of the United States. Aretha was voicing one of the most important moments in history. If there was someone in Detroit who was born to sing, it was little Aretha. Her mother was a gospel singer, and her father was a preacher who believed that music could move not just people's hearts, but the world. Her mom left when Aretha was very little, but she never felt alone. Home was always filled with musicians, and she learned to play the piano just by listening to them. She started singing in the gospel choir at the church where her father was a minister. Aretha's voice was so powerful and as smooth as silk. Listening to her, the whole congregation felt that tomorrow would be a brighter day. Convinced of her talent, Aretha's father took her on tour, and together they went from church to church. Wherever Aretha performed, she did it with such grace that people would cry with joy. But even though she loved gospel music, Aretha dreamed that her voice could be heard outside the church, in people's homes. So, when a record company offered her a contract, she didn't have to think about it twice. Before long, Aretha's songs were climbing the charts. There was something magical in her voice that moved people's hearts and bodies, much like her most popular song. It was called Respect, and it was a song written by Otis Redding that sounded brand new in Aretha's voice. Suddenly, the words of a tired working man became an anthem for African American women demanding equal respect. One of Aretha's friends was Martin Luther King Jr., the great civil rights leader. She stood next to him, challenging people to raise their voices against racism. When he died, she sang the most beautiful song in his honor, Precious Lord. Aretha started writing her own songs and producing them too. She went from gospel to jazz, doo-wop and pop to rhythm and blues, singing every song from the bottom of her heart. She recorded hundreds of great hits, and she loved them all. Aretha used a secret recipe when writing her songs. They had to talk about everyday ups and downs. That's what soul was all about. It took Aretha 30 long years to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She was the first woman in history to be on the list. Aretha was the queen of soul and a trailblazer for many other female artists. But her greatest honor was singing at the inauguration of the first African-American president of the United States. Aretha was voicing one of the most important moments in history.
Fin de la prueba.